Translation. One who considers the transcendental body of Lord Vishnu to be made of material nature is the greatest offender at the lotus feet of the Lord. There is no greater blasphemy against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please repeat. One who considers the transcendental body of Lord Vishnu to be made of material nature is the greatest offender at the lotus feet of the Lord. There is no greater blasphemy against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. This is a long purport. What would you like to do? Listen to the whole thing like philosophers? Or have it broken down into chunks? Broken down into chunks. I've prepared a very philosophical class for philosophers. Let's see how we do. It's about three times longer than normal. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami explains that the variegated personal feature of the absolute truth is the Vishnu Tattva, and that the material energy which creates the cosmic manifestation is the energy of Lord Vishnu. Okay? You can take notes if you want. The creative force is merely the energy of the Lord, but the foolish conclude that because the Lord has distributed himself in an impersonal form, he has no separate existence. The impersonal Brahman, however, cannot possess energies, nor do the Vedic literatures state that Maya, the illusory energy, is covered by another Maya. There are hundreds and thousands of references, however, to Vishnu Maya, Parasya Shakti, or the energy of Lord Vishnu. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna refers to Mama Maya, my energy. Maya is controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not that he is covered by Maya. Therefore, Lord Vishnu cannot be a product of the material energy. In the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra, it is said, Janmadyasya Yataha, indicating that the material energy is also an emanation of the Supreme Brahman. How then could he be covered by the material energy? If that were possible, material energy would be greater than the Supreme Brahman. Even these simple arguments, however, cannot be understood by the Mayavadi philosophers. And therefore, the term Mayaya Paritta Jnana, which is applied to them in the Bhagavad Gita, is extremely appropriate. Anyone who thinks that Lord Vishnu is a product of the material energy, as explained by Sadananda Yogindra, should immediately be understood to be insane, for his knowledge has been stolen by the illusory energy. Okay, we say something there. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. In the Sadananda is one of the Navayogendras. Eh? Is that what we're the conversation? We're studying? Sadananda? No? Oh, he's saying here. Why is he called Yogendra? He's not in control of yoga. Apparently, Prabhupada says here, he's not in control of his sanity. There are standard arguments against the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not everybody is like you. Not everybody immediately, relatively, accedes to the proposition, the philosophical proposition, that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. How long did it take us to come to Krishna consciousness? In many cases, it was one or two conversations, you liked the devotees, and you sort of glided into Krishna consciousness, or you might have been born in a family of devotees, or you just sort of accepted that the devotees were wonderful people, and you started coming to the temple, and it all seemed rather effortless. You didn't have to do a dot-to-dot puzzle of the philosophy in order to be sitting here in this class. A lot of it is based on feelings. A lot of it is based on recollections, sentiments that I kind of like this. I like this. I like the devotees and I like this. Well, here comes the surprise. There are times in our life when we think, I don't like this. I don't like these devotees. And I don't like this idea anymore that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. I think I want to go out there. Because how many times have the Brahmacharis done this play? I think I want to see what's out there. Whether it's Ajamil, nice Brahmin, fully convinced, Brahmin family. I think I want to see a little bit more of that. Prabhupada once, he was sitting on the Vyasasan, and he said he was imitating the what a devotee goes through. He says, I miss my friends. I am not sure if I agree with everything. I want to eat differently. Let me go. Let me leave this Krishna consciousness movement. Then Prabhupada waits for a minute and he says, but wait a minute. If I leave this Krishna consciousness movement, I will also lose my devotee friends. I will also lose beautiful deity worship. I will also lose wonderful feasts. I will also lose kirtan. All right, let me stay. But unfortunately, this should I go or should I stay? This is what is going on. And it's the other way around, isn't it? Should I stay or should I go? This is what is slowing us down in our spiritual life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the point of conviction that one should perform the six different features of surrender to the absolute. He says this is accepting all things that are favorable for Krishna service and rejecting all things that are unfavorable, etc. He says this is just the doorstep of the house of bhakti. It's not the conclusion. Don't think that when you're on the doorstep, you're inside the house. You have to get inside the house and visit the different rooms of bhakti. But for a long time, we can stay on the doorstep of the house of bhakti, thinking, should I go in or should I leave? Will they have me? Am I ready for this? Should I stay or should I go? And this can go on for how many? A few more minutes? A few lifetimes even? Yeah. It's sort of like being perched on the edge of an open doorway of an airplane. You've taken all the trouble to get your sponsorship money to get up there, okay? You're collecting, I don't know, you're raising funds for something. And you've said, I'm going to do a parachute jump. So you've got all your sponsorships, okay? You've had your instruction. The red light is on. And now you're thinking, should I stay here or should I go? Jump! Why not jump? If the parachute is already on your back. You've had your training. So jump. What are you waiting for? Fear. We fear. We fear that in Krishna consciousness, I'm going to lose my individuality. I'm going to lose. They took everything from me. Tea, coffee, cinema, ladies, boys. They took away from me chocolate. They took everything I ever enjoyed. And now they want me to jump out of an airplane 7,000 feet in the air? No way. This is too much. Let me just check this philosophy out for a little while longer. Okay, let me check it out a little while longer. See if I want to stay. I'm not quite sure. I'm holding on to my independence. I'm not quite sure whether I want to be here. Let me just check this out a little bit. This checking out Krishna consciousness could take some time. It could take a very long time. But if you jump, if you just jump and understand that Krishna will catch you, then you can start having some fun. Because the thrill of parachute jumping starts when you jump. There's no thrill being in an airplane. Not really. Especially the airplanes that they use to take you up for a parachute jump. It's shaking all over the place. It's much more fun if you jump. Okay, so I jumped. I got initiated. What does that mean? Are you inside the house of bhakti if you got initiated? I got my name. So what? So you got a name. Okay? So you got a name. That's a name that makes you hopeful that you're a Das. It doesn't mean that you're a Das. It means you've officially registered yourself as wanting to make that jump. It doesn't mean that you've jumped. I got initiated. It was the culmination of a long term of preparation. Surely I deserve some credit for that. Yes, you got initiated. That's the credit. Initiation means the beginning. Now get on and do what you were supposed to do. Now why do we wait? And part of the waiting is that we take recourse in different philosophies. And these different philosophies, there's only really four of them. How many? Four. There's jnana, karma. What else? Well, bhakti, that's what we're talking about. Yoga, ashtanga yoga. Yeah, there's different ways. And you can divide everything that makes a devotee leave this Krishna consciousness movement pretty much into karma yoga and jnana. Lower end of karma, of course, means instead of long distance sense gratification, it's short distance sense gratification. Yoga can mean various speculative philosophies. Jnana can mean, and jnana is a big one. Prabhupada calls jnana, or our acharyas call jnana, the last snare of Maya. Just when you thought it was all over. Just when you thought it was safe. Along comes jnana and snaps you. How does jnana manifest? It manifests in a dissolution of your conviction that the supreme entity is personal. Because you were never really convinced anyway. You never took the trouble to convince your mind step by step that Krishna was the supreme personality of Godhead. It was sort of a nice idea. And then everything else got in the way, whether it was the Bhakta program, or getting initiated, or meeting swamis, or Janmashtami festival, or clearing the field. You know, stuff just gets in the way. Okay? There's always something to do this weekend. There's always a book to distribute, someone to preach to, as if you know everything. Some university program to attend, as if you were a philosopher. Something to do. And we fill our lives with something to do. And then it takes us by surprise. And then you get to 40. And then suddenly you realize, why did I join this movement? Why did I join? Of course, you don't have to wait until you're 40. Can be sort of, I got initiated when I was 18. And there was a devotee sitting in the ceremony beside me. And he left before the end of the initiation ceremony. He left just before it was time for him to get his beads. And he never came back. We never saw him again. So he made a decision. But he took his time making a decision. So at any stage, Maya may come very subtly. And it's very subtle. Maya doesn't always come as a beautiful member of the opposite sex or a cream bun. Maya comes in many disguised ways and very, very subtly. Like a tiny little mouse, Maya will come and nibble away at your conviction. Just a tiny, how big is a mouse bite? Not very big. Just tiny, some tiny, tiny little thing niggling away. You know, I've always wondered about that. Okay? I've always wondered about that. They say that men are always too proud to go to the doctor and check out some niggling little sensation. And that's how, you know, men die earlier. You see, women, they live a lot longer than men. Men, they never go to the doctor, that's why. They'll never go and say, "Doctor, I think something's wrong with me." Men are always too proud to go to the doctor and say, "I think something's wrong." They think, "No, nothing's wrong with me." Nothing's wrong with me. And similarly in the philosophical arena, nothing's wrong with me, I have no doubts. Look at me, I'm preaching Krishna consciousness. How can I be doubtful? There's tilak on my head. I'm a das, I've been initiated. Or, look at me, I'm a senior devotee. Unshakable conviction. Oh no, it doesn't mean that. Doesn't mean that at all. So 30 or 40 years, if 40 years have taught us anything, it is that unshakable conviction, Prabhupada said, only exists. Prabhupada, how is it that sometimes big devotees, they fall down? They were talking about sannyasis, even in Prabhupada's time it happened, of course. So he said, big devotee? He said, Narada Muni is a big devotee. He said, oh, anybody else, they can become confused at any time. So a little niggling pain, a little tingling sensation, especially if you're a man, you should know, let's get me to the doctor. The other week I didn't do that. I had a little tingling sensation in my tooth. By the time Janmashtami came, I was climbing the wall at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I wasn't chanting Vedic mantras. So then I should have got it checked out. So then I went to the dentist. So whether it's Danta or Vedanta, see what I did there? You have to get it checked out. Some little doubt in Vedanta or some little doubt about your Danta, you have to get it checked out. Otherwise the future will be painful. There's a very nice scene of some of our devotees have gone to yesterday, day before yesterday, they went to Ladakh. And Ladakh, they're raising funds for Food for Life, Vrindavan. So in Ladakh, I believe there's a big Buddhist monastery. And in Ladakh, in the morning time, you will see all the young Buddhist monks all in their shaved heads and saffron robes. And they're all in pairs, and they're shouting at each other. And sometimes they're punching the air, and they're doing this, and then they're... And what they're doing is they're debating with each other. They're debating with each other. One is putting forward some anti-Buddhist statement, and the other one is defeating it. And then the other one sits down, and the other one takes his place. The one who's debating stands up so he can get really animated. So they're debating each other because debate keeps the mind strong. Otherwise the mind becomes very woolly, very fluffy. So debate is actually a very good technique for strengthening the mind in the arguments that one day, maybe not today, maybe not when you're on that Harinam led by Govinda, you're very absolutely convinced that Krishna consciousness is the way, the truth, and the light, and no one comes to the Father but by Harinam Sankirtan. So why is everybody who's ever done Sankirtan not going out on Sankirtan to Leighton Buzzard and Dunstable and Milton Keynes? Where are they? Where are the people from, the Vyasa Puja books of 40 years ago and 35? Where are they? Where have all the Vaishnavas gone? We need to hold on to them, every single one of them. Because, my father was in the Royal Air Force. My mother was in the Royal Air Force. And as a child, I grew up on an Air Force base, as I was a baby. And so in the house was always, pictures of airplanes and books on airplanes and, stories about pilots and the heroes. When I was, as a kid, was always a pilot. If you could be a pilot when you grow up, son, that's the topmost. That's the ultimate. So, do you know how long it takes to train an RAF pilot? How long does it take to train someone? And how much money does it take to train someone who can fly at 750 miles an hour and navigate through mountains? How long does it take? I don't know. It takes years. It takes years. Now, each of those planes that they fly costs 14 million pounds. They would much rather lose a plane than lose the pilot, because it costs far more. The whole industry of the Royal Air Force exists to create an RAF pilot. They are the top brass. Even that's where the expression top brass comes from. So the whole enterprise of this Krishna consciousness movement exists pretty much. All the dust, all the feather dusting that goes on, all the the picking things up in the field, all the bhakti programs, all the Sunday feasts, all the books, everything exists pretty much to create missionaries. Even the number of our rounds, 16 rounds, has been set because Prabhupada wanted to create a missionary group, a group of preachers. Otherwise, he could have set the level a lot lower. He could have said, "All right, I really need a big movement for Krishna consciousness. I really want to make this a popular movement. So we're going to chant, how many rounds a day? 4 rounds, Srila Prabhupada. Yes, your name is Krishna Das. It would have been so easy, and we would have been a big movement, but would we have been preachers? Prabhupada wanted preachers. So everything is to create people who are absolutely convinced in their delivery of the Krishna consciousness philosophy. Otherwise, this movement is very pedestrian. It's very pedestrian. And it stays very parochial. Preacher means someone who is bold enough to seek to debate with someone who has an opposing view, to convince them, and someone who, on the basis of Shastra, can actually produce arguments that can convince them. So here we have one of the main arguments against the Krishna consciousness movement. It's not just a remote text. This is one of the main ones. That when Krishna comes to this world, just see, I read in the Mahabharata that Krishna bleeds. He has arrows in him, he bleeds. When he leaves this world, he gets struck in the foot by the hunter, Jara. He bleeds. Therefore, Krishna's body is made of matter. Therefore, he was a historical figure. Therefore, he was a philosopher. Therefore, following the Krishna consciousness movement is like following someone like Buddha or Karl Marx, someone else, because Karl Marx is also a philosopher and he also bleeds. Therefore, it's very nice, the ideas that you have, but don't try to produce it that somehow a philosopher that you followed, who's just like Aristotle or Plato, historical figure from thousands of years ago, that he is actually the supreme being. You see? Oh, now what do I do? But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, well, I've already established for you that Krishna is a philosopher. That's good. So now you're quoting Krishna in order to support Krishna? I don't think so. Now what do I do? So in this verse, in this purport, Prabhupada is first of all introducing us to Vedic evidence from the Upanishads, the Vedanta. This is the whole point, that bhakti rests on the foundation of Vedanta. Because the persons who say that Vishnu's body is material, they also claim to be able to establish that from Vedanta. Even Shankaracharya, he accepts that Vishnu is the supreme, but he says that Vishnu is a manifestation of Brahman. But Vishnu is a manifestation in Sattva-guna. You see, temporary manifestation. So then, we depend on those who have gone before us. We stand on shoulders of giants. We stand on the shoulders of the Acharyas, the Acharyas. So, my dear friends, let me just give you some evidence. How do we interpret the Upanishads? We interpret the Upanishads by something. You can't just read the Upanishads. You have to know how to interpret them, because the evidence is not always strung together conclusively. God does this. It's very interesting. If you want to, God will allow you to be an impersonalist. The Supreme Personal Being will allow you to deny his existence. That's free will. So the Upanishads, when they're given to human society, there's enough in them to be convinced that Krishna or Vishnu is not the Supreme Person, or that he's a material manifestation. There is that there. If it was incontrovertible just from the Upanishads itself, then you would have to believe. Okay. So how do we interpret the Upanishads? We read that there's a body of work known as the Mimamshakas. And the Mimamshakas talk about our interpretation. See, if you read the Upanishads, you come to the conclusion that there's possibly several different entities that created the world. When we want to know about God, there's a sort of a direct transaction. I live in the world, and God must be the person who's the controller, the creator, and the ultimate destroyer of the world. So who is that? If I read one Upanishad, the Chandogya Upanishad, it says, in the beginning was Sat. In the beginning was the eternal. If I read the Aitareya Upanishad, it says, in the beginning was Atman. If I read the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it says, in the beginning was Brahman. And if I read the Maha Upanishad, it says, in the beginning, there was only Narayan. So now we've got four people who created the world. One's called Sat, one's called Atman, one's called Brahman, or Brahman, and one is called Narayana. So the very idea that four different entities can create the world is, of course, fallacious, because creator means that person who is not created. Okay? So when you have that which is eternal, it's that which is not created. So it must be, there must be a singularity, there must be one. So Mimamshaka says, for interpreting the Upanishads, when you have several general terms mentioned in the same body of work, and then you have a specific term, then the specific term indicates all the general terms. And the answer is given, is that just as it is said when the Upanishads, or when the Vedas say, a sacrificial animal must be rendered in the sacrifice, and in other places it says goat. Therefore, you are to understand that wherever it says sacrificial animal, it means goat. It's just a logical proposition. So then, what we need to know is that is Narayan anything different than Sat, Brahman, and Atman? Are we talking about the same thing? What's the logical link? So the Maha Upanishad says, Eko Havai Narayana Asit. In the beginning, only Narayana existed. And the Atharvashiras Upanishad says, Brihati Brahma Yati Tasmad Uchite Param Brahma. Now, Brihati means that which grows. This is the definition of Brahman. And Brahmyati means that which causes something else to grow. So when you cause something else to grow, you're understanding that what is being caused to grow is a Shakti of that which has caused it to grow. It's an attribute. So therefore, Brahman has attributes. Oh, this is not the definition of Brahman as the impersonal entity. We're talking here about a Brahman that has attributes, just like the soul has the attribute of the body. We have to also understand that the Vedas are given to us by sages. So just as there are Mimamshaka, please try and stay with me. It's fun. It will be fun, ultimately. There's someone called Panini. And Panini is the great Shiksha Guru. When devotees say Shiksha Guru, sometimes they mean anything in a wide spectrum of person, from someone who teaches me something about Krishna consciousness to my bhakti leader, to a sannyasi that I'm very fit. Shiksha has a specific meaning. It is all about pronunciation, meter, meanings of words, definitions of words. So Panini wrote a sutra, the Shiksha Sutra. It's the original book on how to be a Shiksha Guru. And in those rules, he says that Sat, Brahman, and Atman, these are generic terms, whereas Narayana is a specific term. So Panini isn't a Vaishnava. He's not someone that we can put, he's not in our parampara. He's a person, he's a great sage who tells us how to interpret the Vedas, because the Vedas need interpretation. So he says Narayan is a proper name, not a tattva. This, he says this in Panini Sutra 8.4.3. Write it down in your books. Someone told me, who comes to devotee classes and who goes to Buddhist classes, she says, I know the difference between devotees, Hare Krishna devotees, and Buddhists. I said, what's the difference, apart from the philosophy? She said, when I go to a Buddhist class, everybody's taking notes. When I go to a class of devotees, everybody's listening but not taking notes. So I thought that was interesting. Anyway, here we go. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, Narayan is described as follows. Three qualities. He is Param Brahma. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. The Taittiriya Upanishad qualifies Brahman for us as Param Brahma. The highest Brahma is Narayana. So Narayana must have this special quality. Narayana is Paratattva. Paratattva, the highest truth. And Narayana is also Paramatma. Now, when you say Paramatma, you mean the person that's entered into everybody's heart. No, don't think. We haven't defined him yet. Okay, we're just going through the Vedas and see what we can glean. We're like forensic scientists, okay? We have to be on the scene of the crime, and a little bit of hair here, and a little bit of blood over here, and a little bit of glass over here, and a footprint over here. You put them all together. Only then you have to be able to present evidence in court, you see, because you're dealing with the prosecution. And the prosecution, they don't think that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but you want to defend Krishna, okay? So you have to be able to present all the different evidence. So what's all the different evidence? You have to be, it's just a scrap here in the Vedas and a scrap here and a scrap there. You can't say, Prabhupada said. You can't even say, Krishna says he's the Supreme Being. That's nice, that's interesting information, but first of all you have to present why this entity known as Krishna is the same as Vishnu, is the same as Brahman, Atman, and Sat presented in the Vedas. It's a long string of conclusions. So in this, here it comes. In the Subal Upanishad, we find that Narayana is Antaratma. And this is a very important definition. Antaratma means the soul that enters into all. This is very interesting. So Antaratma, just this one word. Antaratma means he becomes the Antarayami. He's the one Brahman, the one soul, Narayana, who enters into everyone. So only one person has this. Only one person can be all-pervading. Because don't forget, along with the Vedas, we find that there are many, many devas. And we're trying to say that out of all the names mentioned, one is the Supreme Truth. So, Nara means the universe, and Ayana means the ground of the universe, that which supports and substantiates the entire universe. So, in the Taittiriya Upanishad, we find that the Swarupa, or the nature of Brahman, I've only got two more minutes of this, you'll be delighted to know. The Taittiriya Upanishad says the Swarupa of Brahman, or its intrinsic nature, is that it is Satyam, it is reality. Jnanam is knowledge, and it's Anantam, it's infinite, infinity itself. But if you understand that Narayan is Brahman, then you have to make the causal link that Narayan is the possessor of these attributes. These are attributes. They're not just, it doesn't just talk about the intrinsic nature of Brahman, it talks about those as attributes of Brahman. And as soon as you talk about possessor and possessed, then you're talking about a duality between Brahman and the Shaktis of Brahman. So then, I'll skip a little bit here, just a little bit of hair and a little piece of glass. So then we come to the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which says that this supreme truth is neither gross nor minute. It's not big, it's not small. It's not short, it's not long. We come to the Ishupanishad and we find tadejiti tannaijiti, tadure tadvantike, tad antarasya sarvasya taru sarvasyasya bhayataha. We find lots of, you know, paired opposites. This is to help us understand that he's nothing like you can possibly understand. Nothing. Don't even think that you can understand. You think that you can understand, but you can't understand. So the first job of the Vedas, the first job of the Upanishads, is to tell you you're a fool, that you cannot understand. And let me tell you how you can't understand. It's not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. Oh, I don't know anybody who's like that. My wife is not like that. My dog is not like that. My mother's not like that. My house is not like that. Not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. Oh, okay. What's the next part? Okay, here's the next part. That the Mundaka Upanishad said that Brahman is Sarvagya. Sarvagya. Very, very important. Now, this Sarvagya doesn't mean the intrinsic nature, remember? We already got past that point. It means the attribute that is possessed. That this person has to be a person now. We're in that field. Must know everything. He's antaratma. He's entered into everything. He must know everything. So therefore, that when we talk about Narayan or having jnana, it means it's an attribute or a function. Now we come to the conclusion that the universe is created by, in the Upanishads, it said the universe is created by sankalpa. Sankalpa. That doesn't mean there's another fifth entity that creates the universe, but sankalpa means will. And will, Ramanujacharya makes this argument, he says that will is a function of knowledge. So that means that the possessor of knowledge changes the knowledge into a determinate, and the universe is created from that. And then, here's the verse that Prabhupada introduced us to. From the Svetashvatara Upanishad. Parasya shaktir vividaiva shruyate swabhaviki. Swabhaviki. Jnana bala kriya cha. So all these shaktis are an attribute of this person. And this person reveals it in different ways. So these are the shaktis of Brahman. Now, we just got one little bit in the connecting link. It's like those games. You've connected everything in your Lego set, and there's a couple bricks left to go. So now we have to prove that Vishnu is Narayan. Okay? Because you could still say, well, this Narayan is something. No. But now we have this Vishnu person. Now here we have a problem. Here we have a problem. Because if we, there's two corollaries of the Vedas and the Upanishads. One is known as the Pancharatra Agamas. And this tells us all about the worship of different gods, of whom Vishnu is one of them. Okay? Then we have the, what else do we have? We have the, Ahirbudna Samhita, Lakshmi Tantra, and then also at the same time we have the forgetting. So, Puranas. So then in Puranas we find all these different stories. And of course in these different stories we find that there's Brahma, there's Vishnu, and there's Mahesh. So what are we going to do? Three different entities. Well, we go back to Panini. Thank God for Panini and the great sages. And he says that Vishir, which is the essence of Vishnu, means he's all-pervasive. Therefore, we've established a causal link between Vishnu, who means that entity which is all-pervasive, Narayan, which means the Brahman who possesses qualities, who enters into all living entities, and we say that Vishnu pervades everything. And in the Narasingha Tapani Upanishad, we find that it is Vishnu that pervades the celestials, the divine beings, all the worlds, all other entities, and the human heart. And then, as a conclusion, we can nip over to a book known as the Ahirbhudnya Samhita. Ahirbhudnya means Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva, he's giving a dialogue. And this book is mentioned in the Mahabharata, and it's the book from which many verses are taken for the Hari Bhakti Vilas. And the Hari Bhakti Vilas comes to the Satkriya Sardipika, and the Satkriya Sardipika comes all the way down to why you have just offered flower petals at the feet of the Guru. Why do you do that? Krishna doesn't say it in the Bhagavad Gita. Why do you put flower petals on the feet of the Guru? Because a long, 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 long time ago, Lord Shiva spoke the Ahirbhudnya Samhita. And it says it's a good thing to put flower petals on the feet of the guru. And the Mahabharat says, in ancient times. So this predates Mahabharat. This goes back to the origin. So then we find Lord Shiva speaking on Archana. And he's also talking about Vishnu as the supreme person. Well, we could have taken a shortcut and gone there, but the point is that taking shortcuts means sometimes there may not be the necessary information in your mind to convince your mind, who is still your worst enemy. Simply because you got initiated doesn't mean that your mind is not the worst enemy. Now the mind comes before you in disguise. Before your mind came to you and said, don't get initiated. Don't get initiated. You'll lose. Don't get initiated. Please, for my sake. See? Me and the ego here, we don't think it's a good idea. Therefore, Prabhupada says initiation is committing suicide of the ego. It's the time to end the ego and finish that off once and for all. But just... So then this character comes towards you and he's covered all in bandages. And he says, you hurt me. You really hurt me. But we're still friends, right? We've been together a long time. Just because you got initiated doesn't mean you should banish me forever. Come on, I mean, you know, have some self-respect. And I can help you a little bit with self-respect. In fact, don't let them push you around just because you're an initiated devotee. No. Let me tell you, I've got a plan. Very quickly, you can become something called a senior devotee. And that's quite good. So then, we have to understand, actually, that Shankaracharya acknowledges Vishnu as the supreme person. He says there can't be two creators. There's, you know, it's, if something which is created cannot be eternal. So when we look and we discover that Brahma is created and Shiva is created, and the only person that's not created is Vishnu. And then finally, we can go all the way back to the Rig Veda, and then what's mentioned in the Rig Veda actually makes sense. The Rig Veda Samhita. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. Paramam Padam means the highest place. Paramam. This word Paramam, no one else is Paramam. When you see Paramam Padam, Vishnu Paramam Padam, then we're saying all the great sages, they see the highest place belongs to Vishnu. Otherwise, you will take that verse and you will say, no, what this means, you see, what this means is that Vishnu means the sun. And when you chant Gayatri, you meditate on the sun. And Vishnu is one of the Adityas. And he's a celestial sun deity. And in those days of the Rig Veda, they were sun worshippers and fire worshippers. And they made a link between the celestial fire, which was the sun, and the earthly fire, which was the fire sacrifice. And that's what Vishnu means. So you have to go all the way around the houses and come back. But when you come back to the Rig Veda, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. Okay. So then, that's it. I'm finished. And then finally, in the Narayana Upanishad, we find Narayana Brahma Jayate. Narayana Rudra Jayate. Jayate means the beginning is creator. So Narayana is the beginning of Brahma. Narayana is the beginning of Rudra. Having already proved that Narayana is Vishnu, then we say Vishnu has created these. And then we look at the Puranas, and we find that the Puranas substantiate this. You can't just look at the Puranas, because some people don't believe in the authority of the Puranas. They say, yeah, some very nice stories for women. Very nice stories. Women like to come together at religious meetings and listen to stories. You see. But a Shankarite has to accept your proof from the Upanishads. So you're stitching together the fabric of your presentation from the Upanishads. And if you learn those, and you occasionally, not punch a person, but punch your fist in debate, you will find it's very helpful. So then, this is why in these purports, we find long purports to try to establish the fundamental points, because we're right here at the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, more than this, Chaitanya Charitamrita slightly takes for granted that you know these things. Why would you pick up a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita and have to, it sort of begins at the point that Lord Chaitanya is Vishnu. Lord Chaitanya is the supreme personality of Godhead. You'd have to be a real Vaishnava to pick that up in the beginning. And you'd already have to be a Gaudiya Vaishnava. How many years? 1486, 1534. Who's a mathematician here? 1534 to 1616. How many years? 82 years? Okay, I'm just accepting on your authority. Because you're a brahmachari and you never tell lies. 82 years have gone by. There's already at least 4 major biographies of Lord Chaitanya in existence. And these are read by the entire Gaudiya Vaishnava community. We're talking now a lot of second generation devotees who accept Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of God. And this is the beginning. We're just in the Adi Leela. Because it's important to realize that as you go through the story of this remarkable person, who he is, if you don't get that established in the beginning. So there is some proof in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, but it's not every single proof. And the reason is because when you pick up Chaitanya Charitamrita, you're already supposed to be a Gaudiya Vaishnava. Otherwise, you'd pick up the Ballabhacharya Charitamrita, or the stories of the 84 devotees of Ballabhacharya. Or you'd pick up the life of Guru Nanak, or you'd pick up the life of any saint, which also runs to, several volumes. And you'd still believe in Krishna. But the reason we pick up Chaitanya Charitamrita, because we are the branch of Krishna worshippers, firstly, who believe that Krishna is the supreme Vishnu. Secondly, who believe that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that same person. It's a very specific branch. So then some evidence is produced here. The evidence that we have to, just in order to establish the bona fides of the book that we're now reading. And of course, it's also in this book, Krishnadas Kaviraj is also giving ample evidence so that the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will be able to defend his position. Because that's the business of the 6 Goswamis, and that community at the time is to defend the position of Panchatattva and to preach that, because along with that comes the Yuga Dharma. So Yuga Dharma is very closely related to the existence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Krishna. Otherwise, if you can't prove that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, then you can't prove that the thing that Lord Chaitanya gave is the Yuga Dharma. Yes, there's a couple of verses in the Bhagavatam. A couple of verses. Beginning and end. All right, there's more. But you wouldn't be able to conclude that it takes the shape and form as the Panchatattva gave it. So for all these reasons, Chaitanya Charitamrita is giving us this. I'm going to finish here for questions because I have a meeting at 9 o'clock, and then the rest of the purport either someone can do next week, or yes. Prabhupada goes on to talk about how and why a person who shuns this essential understanding of Vedic literature is living in hell. And he doesn't, he puts icing on the cake and he puts cherries on the cake, just so you really do understand. And he quotes the Padma Purana. Arche Vishno Shiladhir Gurushu Naramatira Vaishnavi Jati Buddhi Yasyava Naraki Saha. One who considers the Archamurti, the worshipable deity of Lord Vishnu, to be stone, the spiritual master to be an ordinary human being, and a Vaishnava to belong to a particular caste or creed is possessed of hellish intelligence. And then he comments, one who follows such conclusions is doomed. Very strong purport. Very strong purport. It means that, you know, you've jumped and you haven't got a parachute. You've decided, yeah, I'm going to be a devotee. And you've jumped. You got initiated. But if after initiation you discover that you're actually looking at the deities and you're thinking, yeah, stone. Or if you're looking at the Vaishnavas and you're thinking, yeah, this one's English. This one's Italian. This one's Gujarati. This one, you know, and you're not thinking, this one's old, this one's young, this one's a woman, what can she tell me? You know, you'd be surprised that this is hellish mentality. And if you think that the guru is an ordinary human being, it means that you have a hellish mentality. So therefore, Prabhupada is very negative here. He's not, of course, then we go on and we have some more, some other purports which will explain things. So any comments, please? Any other proofs? Anybody wants to? No, I won't say anybody who wants to debate me. We don't have time for that.